from the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to Washington Watch. Coming up on this Tuesday edition, the fallout over yesterday's court decision redefining the statutory meaning of the word sex continues.
The bargain which religious conservatives have been offered is not tenable. So I would just say it's not time for religious conservatives to shut up. Now, we've done that for too long. No, it's time for religious conservatives to stand up and to speak out.
That was Senator Josh Hawley of Missouri on the Senate floor earlier today, commenting on yesterday's Supreme Court decision. He joins us with more in just a moment. Also, President Trump today issuing an executive order that is designed to strengthen relations between law enforcement and the communities they serve, heading off the growing effort to eliminate the funding for police departments across the country. Former Attorney General of the United States Jeff Sessions is here to weigh in. And last week, the chairperson of the Republican National Committee, Rona McDaniel, said the GOP would not be producing a party platform for the 2020 election cycle. Now, what is the purpose of a party platform, and why is it important? Texas Congressman Chip Roy joins me for that conversation. And Travis Weber will join me again today for a closer look at the fallout over yesterday's Supreme Court decision regarding Title VII's definition of sex. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you miss anything on your way home, it's all archived right there at TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, if you happen to be there, it's at T. Perkins. By the way, let me remind you, coming up this month is our fiscal year end. In fact, in just about 14 days away. And we have some generous donors that have put forth a $1 million challenge gift so that everything you give will be doubled. The effect of that will be doubled. I've got folks standing by from our team to take your call today. If you'd like to partner with us to ensure that you get information like you do here at FRC and through Washington Watch that you get nowhere else, you hear directly from the news newsmakers, unfiltered by the media. And you hear directly yourself. We let them talk. We want to hear what they have to say. And you hear from the conservatives. You hear from those who are fighting in the trenches for you. We have folks standing by to take your call. 800-225-4008 if you'd like to partner with us today. 800-225-4008, the number to call. We've got folks standing by to take your call. Right, as I mentioned yesterday, the U.S. Supreme Court delivering a 6-3 ruling redefining the meaning of the word sex in Title VII of federal law, as employment law. Now, the implications of this could be quite significant for the future of religious freedom in terms of religious business owners, churches, schools, nonprofits, you name it. Joining me now to talk about the possible implications of the ruling is Senator Josh Hawley of Missouri. He is a member of the Senate Judiciary Committee, which is the committee that vets judicial nominees. Senator, welcome back to the program.
Thanks so much for having me.
Senator, I listened to your speech this afternoon on the Senate floor, and I'll have to say it was one of the most direct speeches that I've heard on the floor calling out your colleagues, calling out legislators who sit back and allow the courts to rule on these things and basically legislate from the bench because lawmakers don't want to do it. They don't want to be held accountable.
Yeah, but the sad truth is, Tony, that almost all of the laws in this country are made either by unelected bureaucrats over in the agencies or they're made by courts. And let's not beat around the bush. What the Supreme Court did yesterday is legislation. I mean, they rewrote Title VII of the 1964 Civil Rights Act. They changed its terms, they changed its scope, they changed its application. And we know it's legislation because Congress has considered doing exactly what the Supreme Court did yesterday. Congress has considered doing that and has decided not to on multiple occasions over the decades. So this was straight up legislation. And the truth is that that's not what our Constitution envisions. That's not our constitutional order. And this is something that has to change.
So, Senator Hawley, why is this ruling so significant?
Well, for a couple of reasons. I mean, the first thing is that by inserting effectively the term sexual orientation and gender identity into Title VII, it radically changes the scope and application of that title. This could have effects from everything. It will certainly have effects in employment law. That's obvious. These are employment cases that were up before the court, likely to have effects in sports, school athletics, other forms of athletics under Title IX, because anywhere the term sex now is used in the 1964 Civil Rights Act and its follow-on statutes, it's now been effectively changed by the U.S. Supreme Court. So it doesn't just affect that one section of this one statute. It affects everywhere. And so certainly I think you'll see effects in sports and athletics, major questions there, major questions for churches and for church schools and for church charities and religious organizations. Their status now, their ability to hire or not according to their faith, their ability to require folks to adhere to behavioral standards according to scriptural tradition or the traditions of their faith, that is very much now up in the air. And the Supreme Court admits that, Tony. In the opinion, they say, yeah, these are important and open questions, and they'll be the subject of future cases.
I read that, and that was concerning to me because it was like they lit a fire alongside the road and said, you know, whether or not this turns into a roaring blaze that will consume everything in its path is yet to be decided. But we're going to light the fire today anyway.
Yeah, and stand back and watch and see what happens. I mean, it is no comfort to religious believers of any kind or any persuasion to hear the Supreme Court say, yeah, you know, your ability to conduct your ministry and your church, your synagogue, it may be completely upended. We'll just have to find out later. And Tony, this is why courts don't legislate. It's because they're not supposed to anyway. It's because legislatures can gather evidence, have hold hearings, where they can write the bill in a very specific way. But that's not what the court did. The court adopted a sweeping rewrite of the statute, and now we're stuck with it. And this is what I was saying today. This part of this is the way we've gotten here is religious conservatives, evangelicals, conservative Catholics, conservative Jews, religious conservatives have been asked for too long now to basically be the silent partners in the legal conservative coalition. We've been told that, listen, you just be quiet. You supply the votes when it's needed. You do as you're asked to do. And maybe you'll get some judges who will protect your constitutional rights. Well, that's clearly not happening. And it's time that we change the bargain.
Yeah, I've been in this post for nearly two decades, and that play has been run multiple times, and the outcome has been similar in almost every case. And you made that point on the Senate floor today that, you know, I think we've come to a point where, look, these judicial nominees, and I know you were criticized for this because you were asking questions of a judicial nominee. In fact, you had people, I would say, of the same persuasion, conservatives, I wouldn't necessarily say in your own party, but they were conservatives who were going to run ads against you because you brought this issue up and just asking questions, which is, quite frankly, what you're supposed to do. We defended you, had you on the radio program talking about that. That's how we've gotten here, is that we don't ask those probing questions, and I believe we should. And this should prove this once and for all, that those hard questions have to be asked.
Well, we just can't be. We can't be in this posture of just, oh, hey, trust me. You know, just listening to the same old people saying, trust me, you know, just we got this. Don't look too hard. Don't ask too. Don't rock the boat. I mean, that's what the establishment has said to religious conservatives for years. I mean, for decades. You're exactly right, Tony. Yeah. I mean, it's decades now that we have seen this and we have been told this. And we've been told, listen, you keep your concerns to yourself. You shut up and go along with this process. And in the end, you know, maybe you'll get something out of it. By the way, the something that we're supposed to get out of it is what all Americans should get out of judging.
Absolutely.
And that is fair application of the Constitution of the United States. Religious conservatives don't want special favors. We want our First Amendment rights and those for all people to be protected. And we need to start insisting on that.
Yes. In fact, Professor Robbie George, Princeton University, former member of our board at FRC, he put out a blog, a statement in part that said this, quote, the tragedy of the Bostock is that despite Justice Gorsuch's desire to practice an authentic textualism, he failed to provide that, just as previous Republican appointees, Sandra Day O'Connor, Anthony Kennedy, and David Souter, so often and often spectacularly failed to provide it. Such failures always wound the rule of law. Coming on top of so many other cases in recent decades, this one may finally discredit it in the eyes of many who have struggled to retain their faith in it, end quote. Do you agree with Professor George?
Oh, I think he's exactly right. And I think it really, for religious conservatives, people of faith who have labored here in the vineyard, so to speak, I think that this result, it really is going to cause people to question What is it we've been doing? I mean, what is it we have been working toward if this is always the result at the end of the day? We have got to do better than this. And that's why I think I'm ultimately hopeful, Tony, about the future, because I think that what's going to happen out of this is religious conservatives of all persuasions and of all faith backgrounds who belong to that coalition are going to stand up and say, we're not going to be quiet anymore. We are going to put forward our ideas. We're going to raise our voices. We're not going to just be content to be relegated to the back. We're going to come up to the front now and lead. And that would be a good thing for this movement, for the country.
Yes, I could not agree more, Senator Holly. And I want to go back and I want to underscore for our listeners and for those who are listening who are not necessarily with us, that we're not looking for justices that would legislate from the bench in the way that we want. We're actually content with the process by which laws are passed in this country. We simply want those on the courts that will adhere to the Constitution and the true meaning of words. This is, to me, Senator, this is very dangerous when you can change the definition of words 40 years later, because that means we have no foundation to stand on. If we can change the language, we can change the words through the very laws that we agree to be governed by, we have a really, really big problem.
Well, there's almost no point in writing down the laws. I mean, we may as well just let the justices just tell us what they think should be the right policy in any given case. I mean, why have the laws written down at all if the words are not going to hold the meaning they had at the time? I mean, the point here, Tony, is that the Supreme Court, the majority, admits that the way they're reinterpreting the statute is not what an ordinary person who would have heard this in 1964, would have read those words in 1964, they wouldn't have ever thought that the meaning of the statute was what the court says it is today. Well, that should be the end of the inquiry right there. I mean, that's what originalist textualism is. Now, I want to add a caveat here, similar to yours, in that, you know, Justice Gorsuch, who wrote the opinion here, this is not a personal critique on my part of Justice Gorsuch. I don't really know him personally, but he's clearly a very able jurist. I think he did this in with all good faith, and it's a very able opinion. I mean, this isn't a stupid opinion. The problem with it is not that it's badly reasoned, it's that it's wrongly reasoned. So I question not him personally, but how we got here. How is it that all of our defense of textualism and originalism gets us to a point where somebody uses those words and those terms, but to reach a result, as you just said, that actually has almost nothing to do with the text?
I don't know if it's just me, but it seems a bit ironic that in the opinion, they tried to defend this opinion in line with textualism, but they redefined the word sex. So how can I trust them to actually have the right definition of textualism?
Exactly. I mean, this is just a case where the court is substituting its own judgment, and that is against the Article 3 power, contrary to the charge that they were given. And for religious conservatives, Tony, I think bottom line is we've got to stand up and say we're not going to take this anymore.
Well, Senator Josh Hawley, we're grateful for you standing up on Capitol Hill, consistently raising these issues. Thanks so much for joining us today on Washington Watch.
Thanks for having me. Thank you.
All right, folks, and we're going to hear more about Senator Hawley's speech on the Senate floor a little bit later in the program. Travis Weber will be joining me, and I've got some clips from that speech, which, quite frankly, was a really, really good presentation of the problem, and as you just heard, an explanation of the solution. All right, next, the president issuing an executive order on police forces. That's next.
As coronavirus restrictions begin to ease, many Americans are grappling with how to adapt to the changing times. The last few months have transformed how worshipers think about church and how they are fed spiritually. While many churches are conducting services through live streams, drive-in services, and other means, questions still remain. What practical steps can we take? Are current restrictions appropriate? Do these restrictions violate the Constitution or religious freedom protections? Family Research Council has a new publication discussing religious liberty issues and offering practical guidelines for how churches and houses of worship can begin to operate as our country opens back up. Visit frc.org/churchguidelines to view this resource and learn more. As always, visit frc.org/church for our full list of resources for churches in the time of coronavirus.
Masculinity in America has never been under attack the way it is today. We've reached the point where the term itself is considered toxic or offensive to many. The consistent message in our nation is that masculinity by nature is bad and is the root cause of many of the problems plaguing our society. From his experience as a military combat officer and ordained minister of the gospel, Lieutenant General William Boykin has seen and dealt with firsthand the breakdown of leadership in our nation by the lack of godly men living lives of biblical purpose. In his latest book, Man to Man, Rediscovering Masculinity in a Challenging World, he addresses the essential elements of manhood as a provider, an instructor, a defender, a battle buddy, and a chaplain, and explains how to personally develop these traits and pass them to the next generation. Get your copy today of Man to Man, wherever books are sold.
Stay informed with what's going on in our nation's capital. Make a difference in your community. And keep your friends and family up to date with Family Research Council's new and improved Stand Firm mobile app. Like never before, this new tool is bringing Christians across America together in advancing faith, family, and freedom. On the Stand Firm app, you can contact your elected officials on campaigns and policies that are important to you with the new Take Action tab. You can listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins live and play previous episodes on our media player while conveniently going about your day. And you can access the Washington Update, informative blogs, tweets, and critical campaigns on our main feed so you can stay up to date on local and national news. Download the Stand Firm app on your mobile browser by visiting frc.org/app. That's frc.org/app.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Tuesday afternoon. The website, TonyPerkins.com. Don't miss your opportunity to stand with FRC, countering the left's agenda as we advance truth and help shape the culture from a biblical worldview. Help us finish out our fiscal year strong, which comes up June 30th. Take advantage of the $1 million challenge match that some generous supporters have made available. We've got folks standing by to take your call. Everything you give will be doubled. 800-225-4008. That number, 800-225-4008, or go to TonyPerkins.com. All right, the president today issuing an executive order establishing best practices for police departments across the country, connecting federal funding to these high standards, which would include the addressing of the use of force and de-escalation tactics that would be credentialed. These would be certified by reputable independent bodies. President getting a jump on Congress, addressing the core of the issue. But there's more here. This is just a clip of what he had to say today in the Rose Garden.
Americans know the truth. Without police, there is chaos. Without law, there is anarchy. And without safety, there is catastrophe.
President, getting ahead of this effort, crazy effort to defund the police. This is a part of the bigger agenda of lawlessness. Joining me now to talk more about this effort and what is needed to address the current situation, former Senator Jeff Sessions, also former Attorney General of the United States, a good friend of ours. Senator Sessions, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, thank you, Tony. And, you know, you just said you need to stand up to the left and advance truth. And I think the big dividing line between the left and the middle America, great American heartland, is that they don't respect truth. And many of the riots are not designed to good faith improve policing and community relations, but are actually deliberately destructive and designed to divide rather than unite. I think that's something we just have to be realistic about.
Well, there's so many layers to this issue of lawlessness where there are those that would prefer that the law enforcement officers that uphold the laws would simply go away so that they can do whatever they want without repercussions, which would lead to total anarchy and chaos.
That is so right. You know, I have some personal experiences. I went to Chicago three times, I think, and made speeches. Chicago entered into a consent decree with the ACLU, and they reduced dramatically the number of police on the streets and the number of arrests that they made. And so we had a pretty good experiment, like defunding police would do, result. And so what happened? After averaging 450 murders a year for a decade, they ended up in 1 year, after the next year, after this consent decree, going from 450 to 800 murders in 1 year. I think 90-something percent of those deaths were African-American or minority citizens of Chicago area. New York went from 2,200 homicides in the early 90s. They stepped up their presence and their enforcement and their arrest, broken windows and Giuliani and Bratton.
Right.
And it went to under 300, 2,200 to under 300. How many lives are saved by good policing? We have to respect and help our police, not denigrate them and undermine them.
Yeah, there's a whole theory of law enforcement based upon broken windows, which Giuliani put into effect in New York City, basically meaning you fix at a minimum, I mean, at the very granular level, fixing broken windows, which states you care. And that's a part of community policing. You have police on the streets. They know the community. And and I go back to my days in law enforcement where most people in the community wanted to see the police because it gave them a sense of security and safety.
Absolutely. You know, here in Mobile, when I was United States Attorney under President Reagan and Bush, we had a conference in the Martin Luther King area because we prosecuted a bad gang. We listened to the community, the mayor, the chief of police, the FBI, and the agents, and they told us they wanted a precinct in their neighborhood. They told us how, as a youth, it was safe there, and the kids played outside, and how it had changed, and they were upset about it. And the chief said, okay, I'll bring you more officers, and the whole area has been transformed as a result of listening to the people in the community, respecting them, not abusing them, but respecting them, listening to them. You can really, it's a total falsehood that police presence properly executed cannot make a community safer. It absolutely does.
Yeah. And that's a part of this coming together of the community and the police as opposed to building walls. You bring them together to police communities. I know you have an opinion on the Supreme Court decision, or at least I would think that you have an opinion, and you may not want to go here, but I see what's happening on our streets for this movement toward lawlessness, like we see in Seattle and elsewhere, and a disrespect for law is being fueled in many ways by our own Supreme Court when they change the definition of words and not go through the legislative process as they should. They lose credibility in the eyes of the public, and I believe that facilitates a sense of lawlessness.
Oh, Tony, that's an insightful. I think you're right about that. I think the greatest danger we have to the legal system in America today is if and when the American people conclude the judges aren't disciplined, they're not showing restraint, but they're using a case as a vehicle to advance an agenda that Congress won't pass. So when I became Attorney General, we switched sides on this recent case over definition of sex in 1964. Obama administration had taken a different view. Attorney General Barr carried on the litigation to the final decision. But our view was that the 64 Civil Rights Act never intended, when they said you can't discriminate about sex, they were not intending to consider your sexual intent. So it amounted to an alteration of the meaning of the law and, in effect, violating the rights of the American people. Congress
right.
had never done this, always could, but they refused to do it.
It just undermines the standing of the court and our whole governmental process in the eyes of the people when we can't trust people to operate under the definition of words and the constraints of the law. I mean, it's real clear in my mind. Senator, thanks so much for joining us. As always, great to be with you. All right, folks, don't go away. We're back with more after this. Masculinity in America has never been under attack the way it is today. We've reached the point where the term itself is considered toxic or offensive to many. The consistent message in our nation is that masculinity by nature is bad and is the root cause of many of the problems plaguing our society. From his experience as a military combat officer and ordained minister of the gospel, Lieutenant General William Boykin has seen and dealt with firsthand the breakdown of leadership in our nation by the lack of godly men living lives of biblical purpose. In his latest book, Man to Man, Rediscovering Masculinity in a Challenging World, he addresses the essential elements of manhood as a provider, an instructor, a defender, a battle buddy, and a chaplain, and explains how to personally develop these traits and pass them to the next generation. Get your copy today of Man to Man wherever books are sold.
Stay informed with what's going on in our nation's capital. Make a difference in your community and keep your friends and family up to date with Family Research Council's new and improved Stand Firm mobile app. Like never before, this new tool is bringing Christians across America together in advancing faith, family, and freedom. On the Stand Firm app, you can contact your elected officials on campaigns and policies that are important to you with the new Take Action tab. You can listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins live and play previous episodes on our media player while conveniently going about your day. And you can access the Washington Update, informative blogs, tweets, and critical campaigns on our main feed so you can stay up to date on local and national news. Download the Stand Firm app on your mobile browser by visiting frc.org/app. That's frc.org/app.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. All right, we got folks standing by to take your call today. As we come to the end of our fiscal year, we've got some generous supporters that have made a $1 million challenge match available so that the impact of your gift is doubled. Now, we receive no government money, never have, and we don't plan on it. We are able to bring you information, the truth about what's happening in our nation's capital and around the country, because people like you partner with us, making Washington Watch possible and supporting the Family Research Council. If you'd like to partner with us, I have some of our team members standing by to take your phone call. The number, 800-225-4008. That's 800-225-4008. They're just waiting to hear from you. All right, every 4 years, the major parties, Republican Party, Democratic Party, have a big convention. They get together. They have thousands of people that come together. And part of what they do is they write a platform. Why is this platform important? Well, we're going to talk about that in just a moment. But the reason we're talking about this today is that last week, the chair of the Republican National Committee, Rona McDaniel, said that the GOP, because of restrictions on meeting in South Carolina, North Carolina, in Charlotte, would not be producing a party platform for the 2020 election cycle. Well, what is the purpose of a party platform, and why does it really matter? Well, join me to talk about this, Texas Congressman Chip Roy. Congressman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, great to be on the show as always. I hope you and your family are doing just wonderful.
We're doing great. Thank you so much. I know we've had some conversations in the past about this. You've been around this process for some time. Why is it why does it matter about these party platforms? What do they do?
Well, I'm glad you asked. I mean, for those, who know a little bit about me, I've been around this for a while, worked on Capitol Hill. I was actually a counsel to the platform committee in 2008 in Minneapolis, actually, and was in Cleveland a couple of years back, or 4 years back in 16. So I've been around this process for a while, and I know a lot about it, and it matters because the platform serves as the vehicle through which the rank-and-file Republicans across the nation, define who we are as a party and what we stand for, and then are able to hold our elected officials, Republican elected officials, of which I am one now, to account. And that's really important. it's really important to have a roadmap that you expect, sort of the lanes, if you will, that you expect the people that you elect to run in. And if you get outside of those lanes, they've got a tool with which to pound you back into the lanes or seek somebody else to run for them. And I think it's really important that we remember that. And the issues that I know we care passionately about, whether they're fiscal conservative issues or whether they're national security issues or, importantly, social conservative issues, we want to make sure those issues are reflected in a platform so that everybody knows what we expect out of our leaders, that we will stand up for our rights to, under the First Amendment, to worship as we please and to pray in schools, that we'll stand up for the unborn, that we'll stand up for the values that we all know made this country great and are inherent in who we are, and our God-given rights are given to us to protect those. And so it's important that we have those, and that's why a platform exists.
And it's a very representative process, because the way it works is you have the Republican parties from every state send two delegates to the platform committee. Every state has two delegates, the territories, two delegates that go, and they are a part of crafting that platform. So it is very reflective of where the Republican voters are across the nation. And then this becomes, as you said, a guiding document. In fact, a few years back, Lee Payne, an associate professor at Stephen F. Austin State University, did an in-depth study that concluded that both Democratic and Republican lawmakers in Congress voted in accordance with their platforms 82% of the time. So these are important documents, and it's vision casting, but it's also, as you pointed out, a tool of accountability.
No, that's exactly right. And look, this is why we painstakingly go through the process of amendments, and how you go through when you have your representatives on the platform committee and you do the work. And I was sitting there as counsel reading through every amendment. We'd have a vote on the amendment. You'd have debates about it, discussion, a lot of discussion from activists back home, back to representatives that are representing their states. And it's really important process to provide the guardrails for the party. And look, unfortunately, what we've been hearing is some concerning efforts to say that maybe we don't need to have a platform. And I couldn't disagree with that more. Now, look, given the circumstances, given the shifting, geographic issues because of the virus and all that's going on, do we want to have a modified approach this year? Do we want to embrace the 2016 platform, maybe with some small tweaks to account for the fact that it's 4 years into a presidency and slightly changed dynamic from 2016? Sure. I'm willing to accept that because the 2016 platform went through a process, and this is an extraordinary circumstance kind of year. We're already moving from Charlotte to Jacksonville. So I think we have to take a look at it and make sure we protect the platform, Tony.
But bottom line, we need a document that will basically cast a vision for the next 4 years.
Amen. We need it, and it's important for the party, the president, and for all of us who care about this country going forward.
All right, Chip Roy, thanks so much for joining us. Great to have you on the program today.
Thank you, Tony. God bless.
All right, Congressman Chip Roy of Texas. He represents the 21st District of the Lone Star State. All right, when we come back, Travis Weber is going to be joining me, Vice President of Policy here at the Family Research Council. I've got a few clips from today's floor speech made by Senator Josh Hawley, who was on the program earlier. A really insightful speech. And I'm going to play some of those clips for you, and we're going to talk about it with Travis Weber. Don't go away. We're back after this with more Washington Watch.
As coronavirus restrictions begin to ease, many Americans are grappling with how to adapt to the changing times. The last few months have transformed how worshipers think about church and how they are fed spiritually. While many churches are conducting services through live streams, drive-in services, and other means, questions still remain. What practical steps can we take? Are current restrictions appropriate? Do these restrictions violate the Constitution or religious freedom protections? Family Research Council has a new publication discussing religious liberty issues and offering practical guidelines for how churches and houses of worship can begin to operate as our country opens back up. Visit frc.org/churchguidelines to view this resource and learn more. As always, visit frc.org/church for our full list of resources for churches in the time of coronavirus.
Masculinity in America has never been under attack the way it is today. We've reached the point where the term itself is considered toxic or offensive to many. The consistent message in our nation is that masculinity by nature is bad and is the root cause of many of the problems plaguing our society. From his experience as a military combat officer and ordained minister of the gospel, Lieutenant General William Boykin has seen and dealt with firsthand the breakdown of leadership in our nation by the lack of godly men living lives of biblical purpose. In his latest book, Man to Man, Rediscovering Masculinity in a Challenging World, he addresses the essential elements of manhood as a provider, an instructor, a defender, a battle buddy, and a chaplain, and explains how to personally develop these traits and pass them to the next generation. Get your copy today of Man to Man, wherever books are sold.
Stay informed with what's going on in our nation's capital. Make a difference in your community and keep your friends and family up to date with Family Research Council's new and improved Stand Firm mobile app. Like never before, this new tool is bringing Christians across America together in advancing faith, family, and freedom. On the Stand Firm app, you can contact your elected officials on campaigns and policies that are important to you with the new Take Action tab. You can listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins live and play previous episodes on our media player while conveniently going about your day. And you can access the Washington Update, informative blogs, tweets, and critical campaigns on our main feed so you can stay up to date on local and national news. Download the Stand Firm app on your mobile browser by visiting frc.org/app. That's frc.org/app.
We've got folks standing by to take your call today. Some of our team members, if you'd like to partner with Washington Watch to make sure this program continues to bring you newsmakers unfiltered by the media. And I'm telling you, I was talking with the president's people the other day, and one of the big frustrations the president has is that he doesn't feel like he's able to get through, break through the media. And that's one of the reasons he's so eager to get on the road and start the rallies again, is so that he can talk to people. And quite interesting that over a million people have requested tickets for the event in Tulsa. You know, there is a lot of support for the president. Now, I'll be very, very candid, and I communicated this, that, you know, when you never know what's going to happen when you pick these judges. You got to do a really good job of vetting them. And, you know, when you look overall at this administration's record on judges, it's been spectacular. All right. Now, this, yesterday's decision, was a big disappointment. Now, there were some signs there that suggested that this could happen, but we were told they were addressed. Now, I think what's going to happen is you're going to see a more thorough questioning, and I think you're going to see candidates. Hopefully, the president will have the opportunity to appoint or to nominate additional Supreme Court justices. And I think you'll see those that have credentials that are beyond question after this decision. It's a major setback for the originalist viewpoint, the what we mean by adhering to the words of the Constitution as they were meant. Because words have meaning, and it's important that we don't just arbitrarily change those meanings. Now, as was pointed out, the court or the Congress, in fact, multiple times have attempted to do this, but never have, to amend the 1964 Civil Rights Act to include gender identity or sexual orientation as protected classes. But they've never had the votes to do that because it's not reflective of where America is. It's the Congress that reflects America, not the court. And when the court short circuits the legislative process by stepping in, they never resolve anything. They only make it, they only bring more division. And at a time when our nation is so divided, this only adds to the division. And as I pointed out with Senator Sessions, I believe that this foments lawlessness. I mean, lawlessness doesn't just happen on the streets. It can also happen in the chambers of the high court. You don't have to wear a black hood. You can wear a black robe to perpetrate lawlessness. And I think changing the definition of words is just that. Now, I've got a few clips here. I want to play a few of these clips. This was from just a couple hours ago on the Senate floor. Senator Josh Hawley spoke on the floor of the Senate and I think gave a really straightforward, hard message, but precisely diagnosing the problem. Play clip one for me.
This decision, this piece of legislation, will have effects that range from employment law to sports to churches. There's only one problem with this piece of legislation. It was issued by a court, not by a legislature. It was written by judges, not by the elected representatives of the people.
Exactly the point we were making. Joining me now to talk more about this as we take a look at not only the court decision, but Senator Hawley's explanation or diagnosis of the situation is Travis Weber, Vice President of Policy and Government Affairs here at the Family Research Council. Travis, welcome back.
Thank you, Tony.
All right. Thoughts on Senator Hawley's comments on the Senate floor today?
Yeah, Tony, I thought they were spot on in so many ways addressing a problem which has several spin-off sub-problems and sub-issues baked into it. What we've been discussing with this decision from the U.S. Supreme Court. But I think Senator Hawley wraps all of these issues together very nicely and notes that, religious conservatives, as he puts it, need to not shrink back from the public square in response to this, but step up and embrace their role in the public square, not only defending their rights and their freedoms, along with the rights and freedoms of everyone else that the Constitution and our laws afford protection to, but rather seeking to make their voice heard for the common good, for the good of their neighbor, the good of those in their communities. And I think what he's getting at is this decision speaking to the implications for negative implications for religious liberty that would marginalize these religious conservatives. And Senator Hawley saying, no, we need to embrace our role in the public square and speak up for our rights and for the good of our neighbors.
He puts forth a question regarding yesterday's decision. Play clip number two.
What will this decision mean, this rewrite of Title VII? What will it mean for churches? What will it mean for religious schools? What will it mean for religious charities?
You know, the court acknowledged that it would have implications, but they basically punted on that, saying, well, we'll have to decide that in subsequent cases. But no doubt, as I mentioned earlier with Senator Hawley at the beginning of the program, they've lit a fire with this decision that could work its way into a raging blaze that could scorch the landscape of America as it pertains to religious freedom.
Well, Tony, you know, the majority opinion in this case tried to address religious freedom, and it finally gets to it, at some point in the opinion, and lays out a few protections in law that are already there. The Title VII religious organizations protection, other protections in our laws, these do nothing to deal with the religious freedom problems that will have that will be part of the fire that the opinion is setting here. They don't resolve them, and the opinion explicitly mentions that it will deal with future cases. Now, we know court cases deal with the matter before them. That's what they're supposed to be doing. But the problem here is the court can't wash its hands of this. It kind of wants to wash its hands of the issues, but it's only multiplied the issues with this opinion. And, we're gonna reap them now. We're going to reap this controversy and division, not only in litigation, but in the contentious and disillusioned debates now that we're having after the court has so clearly failed to produce an originalist faithful interpretation in this case.
Now, you and I earlier today were talking about one of the facilitators of this judicial activism. And in fact, I was surprised how straightforward Senator Holly was in addressing that issue in his speech on the Senate floor earlier this afternoon. Play clip number three.
Every honest person knows that the laws in this country today, they're made almost entirely by unelected bureaucrats and courts. They're not made by this body. Why not? Because this body doesn't want to make law. That's why not. Because in order to make law, you have to take a vote. In order to vote, you have to be on the record. And to be on the record is to be held accountable. And that's what this body fears above all else, Madam President. This body is terrified of being held accountable for anything on any subject.
Truer words have never been spoken. But that is pretty bold as he put that forth on the Senate floor, basically calling out his colleagues.
Tony, I think the lack of courage and the refusal of leaders to stand up on hard issues is a problem in our country today. I mean, it's a problem on the issues that we face. And part of that is being seen in having a voting record and a record that the voters of our country can look to. Certainly, he's diagnosing part of the issue here. And, you know, Congress will often want to punt to the Supreme Court. And leaders will say, well, the courts have decided this, the judge decided that, without any real examination or analysis of whether it should be the judge's role to decide a question like this. So I think that balance needs to be corrected.
Yeah, I'm going to make a statement. I always want to provide a caveat that, you know, when we speak in broad sweeping terms, it is there are clearly exceptions to this. But my experience in elected office is that, you know, the majority, I'm not going to say all, but I can confidently say a majority of those who hold office, their top priority is staying in office and being reelected. And for many, the way you do that is you avoid controversy. You try to have a record that does not cause you to stand out or that would put you into a controversial position. And when you're dealing with these issues like human sexuality, transgenderism, homosexuality, same-sex marriage, even though the numbers clearly reflect that the majority of Americans do not support this, especially when it stands up beside religious freedom, that the advocates for this, even though it's a very small percentage of Americans, are so vocal and in some cases vicious. And again, I don't want to paint everybody with that brush because not all are, but many of the activists are. And they engage in character assassination in social media. And so that puts fear into politicians. And lacking the courage to stand up for what they know is true and right, they shrink back in silence and would rather the court legislate on these issues. And this is not new. This goes all the way back to Roe v. Wade and before. But it is a pattern. And we have to call it for what it is. In my view, it's cowardice.
Tony, I think the issue is most illustrated, as you have observed, on these questions of sexuality because of the blowback of public opinion, the threat of public opinion, and public pressure and the elites of our society. And I fear that that has not left the Supreme Court immune. It's something that the Supreme Court is not immune from. If we look at this opinion, Justice Kavanaugh, though on the right side of this case, issued a platitude in concluding his dissent by praising the advances of the LGBT community. The majority opinion mentioned likewise similar language. There's no need for justices to be editorializing like that. It's a telltale sign, though, that they're interested in how they're viewed in the popular culture, the media, and among elite opinion. And this is one of the pitfalls of this pressure when you don't have people who are unafraid of how they're perceived. This is a problem with people being afraid. Even justices are not immune. We don't know everything that went into this decision, but we know they're not immune from popular perception. This has now caused devastating consequences, though, in three ways. Not one, the way that we are looking at nominations when we had a justice who was supposed to be an originalist is going to cause some soul-searching reexamination. But secondly, shattering the process, integrity in the process, the courts, how we're supposed to trust the courts to be impartial and not legislate. When we have a shift like this, it makes that much more difficult. And third, religious liberty implications, as we've discussed, that are not over with, that we're going to see in the years ahead develop, in which Justice Alito in his dissent noted in all these areas are going to continue to play out. And not only religious liberty, but just common sense issues over men, in biological men in women's private spaces, private areas and bathrooms and so forth, and women's sports. These issues are all spinoffs, even if they don't deal with the legal question before the court today or yesterday.
Right.
We're going to see implications for years to come.
Senator Hawley, that is, kind of wrapped up, concluded his remarks on the Senate floor, talking about the bargain. He mentioned this early in the program, the bargain, but the bargain being that, conservatives, social conservatives, religious conservatives have said, look, you guys just be quiet. You provide the support and we'll give you a judge. And he made this comment. Play clip number four.
If this case makes anything clear, it is that the bargain that has been offered to religious conservatives for years now is a bad one. It's time to reject it. The bargain has never been necessarily explicitly articulated, but religious conservatives know what it is. The bargain is that you go along with the party establishment, you support their policies and priorities, or at least keep your mouth shut about it, and in return, the establishment will put some judges on the bench who supposedly will protect your constitutional rights to freedom of worship, to freedom of exercise.
And he goes on to say, it doesn't work. And he said, it's not time for religious conservatives to shut up. We've done that for far too long. It's time for religious conservatives to stand up and speak out. This is discouraging, in terms of this opinion and the fact that it came from one of the nominees of President Trump. But it's not the end. And we have to continue to defend truth, to advocate, to be engaged, and to ensure that the process works better than the next time.
Tony, I think that's true. We don't want to shrink back now. We don't want to give up on the court. If anything, this just shows us the importance of these issues we're grappling with. The court, Justice or President Trump's nominees have a good record. Justice Gorsuch has other good cases. We need to fit this in the context of that and say, well, how do we avoid a problem like this in the future, a failed result like this in the future, and correct it? And I think that means engagement. It means extra scrutiny on nominees. And it means further attention, of everyone's attention being paid to nominees and this process, knowing that these forces, outside pressures, are being brought to bear on justices. And this is important for the future of our country in so many ways.
It's critical. Absolutely critical. Travis Weber, thanks so much for being with us this afternoon.
Thank you.
And folks, thank you for being with us as well. And let me remind you, we still have team members standing by to take your call at 800-225-4008. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.